just a matter of time before her world fell apart, and whoever was behind her was certainly the harbinger of her destruction.
Beauty.
Adam's voice. Adrian's body went rigid. Her jaw tensed, and her hands fisted when he grabbed her in the darkness and pressed his hips hard against the curve of her rump. She lurched forward, but he tightened his arms around her and dragged her back against his body. When his lips grazed her neck, she tried to scream, but not a sound came out.
"You knew I'd come,"
he breathed against her ear.
"Didn't you, lovely one?"
Adrian wanted to protest, to scream denial, but some part of her had known, on a visceral, deeply subconscious level. In that instant, all her strange encounters with Adam Black were suddenly washed crystal clear in her mind.
"You made me forget,"
she hissed, as memories flooded her.
"The strange things you did. When you took the hawk's face at the fountain, you made me forget somehow,"
she accused. Adam laughed.
"I made you forget when I took you to Morar, too, even earlier than that. Do you remember lying in the sand with me now, sweet beauty? I'm giving them back to you, those stolen times. Remember me touching you? Remember when I took you to my world to cure you? I touched you then, too."
Adrian shuddered as the memories unfogged in her mind.
"I take from you what you don't need to recall, beauty. I could take from you memories you'd love to lose. Shall I, beauty? Shall I free you from Eberhard forever?"
Adam pressed his lips to her neck in a lingering kiss.
"No. I have it. I shall erase every memory you have of the hawk. Make you hate him. Make him a stranger to you. Would you like that?"
"Who are you?"
Adrian choked as tears filled her eyes. Adam turned her slowly in his arms until she faced him. His face was icy, and definitely not human in the grayish half-light.
"The man who's going to destroy your husband and everything at Dalkeith if you don't do exactly as I say. Lovely Adrian, I suggest you listen to me very, very carefully if you love him."
Hawk couldn't find Adam. He couldn't find Grimm. And now he couldn't find his own wife. What the hell kind of wedding day was this? The hawk paced through the lower bailey calling her name, his hands clenched into fists. On the ridge, people had already started to gather. Clanspeople were arriving in droves from miles around. Come twilight, there would be nearly 700 plaids gathered on Dalkeith's shore. The Douglas was a large clan, with many crofters tilling the land. Earlier in the morning, the hawk had sent his guard into the hills and vales, announcing the laird's wedding this eve, thus ensuring the attendance of every last person, young and old. But there wouldn't be any wedding if he couldn't find his wife.
"Adrian!"
he called. Where the hell had she gone? Not in the castle, not in the gardens, not at Dalkeith?
Nay.
"Adrian!"
he roared, his pace quickening to a run. Calling her name, he sped past the Falkenbrach.
"Hawk! I'm here!"
he heard her cry echo behind him.
"Adrian!"
He skidded to a halt and turned.
"I'm right here. Sorry,"
she added as she closed the door to the broch and stepped outside.
"Don't ever leave me again without telling me where you're going. Didn't you hear me calling you?"
he growled, fear roughening his voice.
"I said I'm sorry, Hawk. I must have been wool gathering."
She paused where she stood. Hawk's heart twisted in his chest. He'd found her. But why hadn't that erased his fear? Something nagged, a thing intangible, yet as real and potentially treacherous as the jagged cliffs of Dalkeith. There was an almost palpable odor of wrongness hovering in the air around the broch.
"Lass, what's wrong?"
he asked. Every inch of him tensed as she stepped out of the shadows that darkened the east side of the squat tower. Half her face was deeply shadowed by the sun's descent. The other half was visibly pale in the fading light. Hawk suffered a fleeting moment of impossible duality, as though half her face was smiling, while the other was drawn tightly in a grimace of pain. The macabre illusion chased a spear of foreboding through his heart. He extended his hands, and when she didn't move from that strange half-domino of light and darkness, he strode brusquely forward and pulled her into his arms.
"What ails you, sweet wife?"
he demanded, gazing down at her. But he hadn't pulled her forward far enough. That hated shadow still claimed a full third of her face, concealing her eyes from him. With a rough curse, he backstepped until she was free of darkness. That shadow, that damned shadow from the Brach, had made him feel as if half of her was becoming insubstantial, and she might melt right through his hands, and he would be helpless to prevent it.
Adrienne!
I'm fine, Hawk,
she said softly, sliding her arms around his waist. As the fading light bathed her face, he felt suddenly foolish, wondered how he could have thought, even for a moment, that there was a shadow eclipsing her lovely face. There was no shadow there, naught but her wide silver eyes, brimming with love as she gazed up at him. A trembling moment passed, then her lip curved in a sweet smile. She brushed a stray fall of dark hair back from his face and kissed his jaw tenderly.
"My beautiful, beautiful Hawk," she murmured.
"Talk to me, lass. Tell me what fashes you so," he said roughly.
She flashed him a smile so dazzling that it muddled his thoughts. He felt his worries scattering like petals to the wind beneath the soft promises unspoken in that smile. He brushed his lips to hers and felt that jolt of immediate response tingle through his body from head to toe.
"What shadow? Foolish fears, foolish fancy," he realized wryly.
He was letting his imagination run wild at the slightest provocation. A silly shadow fell across her face, and the great Hawk suffered visions of doom and desolation.
Bah! No lass could smile like that if she was worried about something.
He took her lips in a brutal, punishing kiss. Punishing for the fear he'd felt, punishing because he needed her. And she melted to him like liquid flames, molding and pressing herself against him with fierce urgency.
Hawk,
she whispered against his lips.
My husband, my love, take me. Again, please.
Desire surged through his veins, conquering all traces of his panic. He needed no further encouragement. They had a few hours left to them before the man of God would bind them beneath the Samhain mantle. He pulled her toward the Brach. Adrienne stiffened instantly.
Nay, not in the Brach!
So he took her to the stables, to a thick pile of sweet purple clover where they spent the remaining hours of the afternoon of their wedding like a beggar's precious last coins on a splendid feast. Chapter 29 Adrienne's wedding dress surpassed all of her childhood dreams. It was made of sapphire silk and elegant lace, with shimmery threads of silver embroidered at the neck, sleeves, and hem in patterns of twining roses. Lydia had produced it proudly from a sealed chest of cedar-lined oak, yet another of the Hawk's clever inventions. She'd aired it out, steamed it in a closed kitchen over vats of boiling water, then lightly scented it with lavender. The gown clung at the bosom and hips and fell to the floor in swirls of rich fabric. It had been stitched by the Rome, Lydia told her as she and a dozen maids fussed over Adrienne, for Lydia's wedding to the Hawk's father. Lydia's wedding had also been celebrated at Dalkeith upon the sea at the Beltane festival, before the same kind of double fires laid at the Samhain. But Lydia had gone ahead now, up to the ridge. The maids were gone too, shooed on by Adrienne a quarter hour past. It had taken every ounce of Adrienne's courage to get through the past few hours. Lydia had been so elated, practically dancing around the room, and Adrienne had felt so wooden inside, forcing herself to pretend. She was about to do something that was guaranteed to make Lydia and Hawk despise her, and she had no other choice. How could she bear the looks on their faces when she did it? How would she endure the hate and betrayal she would see in their eyes? Adrienne stood alone in Lydia's lovely bedroom, amidst slowly cooling round irons and discarded choices for underthings, and half-empty cups of tea, left undrunk in nervous anticipation. The time was nearing. And her heart was freezing, breath by bitter breath. She shivered as a crisp breeze tumbled through the open window of Lydia's bedroom. She crossed the room intending to close it, but froze, one hand upon the cool stone ledge. She stared mesmerized into the night.
"I will remember this. Always."
She drank in Dalkeith, committing each precious detail to memory. The full moon held her spellbound as it bathed the ridge in silvery brilliance. It seemed closer to the earth, and so much larger than usual. Maybe she could step into the sky to stand right next to it. Perhaps give it a firm nudge and watch it roll across the horizon. Adrian marveled at the beauty of it all.
This place is magic.
She had a perfect view of the feast from the window. The ridge was alive with hundreds of people spread about the fires on bright tartans, talking, feasting, and dancing. Wine, ale, and scotch flowed freely as the people celebrated the harvest to come. A rich harvest. Her husband had seen to that. Children played children's games, running and squealing and circling back to loving parents. And the music, oh, the music drifted up to the open window, blending with the soft roar of the ocean, the powerful hypnotic beat of the drums, the pipes, and wild chanting. Between the two circles of fire, she could just make him out. The Laird of Dalkeith upon the sea was dancing with his people, his head tossed back, adding his deep butterscotch cry to the song. Her husband. At least she'd gotten to love him for a while. Maybe not forever, but... The beat of drums intensified, and she watched him circle the fire, so primitive and savage, yet so incredibly tender and loving.
"I adore this place," she thought. "If I could have ever dreamt a place to go, back in the 20th century, I would have dreamt this one."
She let her forehead fall against the cool stone wall a long moment and squeezed back the tears.
"I love him more than life itself," she whispered aloud.
And that had been the deciding point.
"Nay," the hawk raised his hands in mock protestation. "You must leave me with strength to wed and bed my wife this eve," he teased the laughing women who tried to lure him into yet another dance. Despite the disappointed looks and saucy remarks about his virility, the hawk made his way higher up the ridge. He'd seen Lydia wander that way with Tavis while he'd been dancing. He paused a moment and looked back at the castle, his eyes searching the windows intently. There it was, Lydia's room, his wife's silhouette visible against the brightly lit window. He watched her turn her back. She was on her way. A chill slithered up the nape of his neck as he studied her back. He watched a long moment, and when she didn't move, he wondered what she was doing. "I should have insisted she keep the guard with her."
"Will they button my gown for me?"
she'd teased, and a swirl of jealousy at the thought of any of his guards touching his wife's silken skin had sealed it. He could watch every step of her progress from the ridge, and the castle wasn't entirely deserted. The ridge was a short walk, a few minutes or less. She should be fine. Yet he worried.
"Have you seen Grimm?"
Lydia touched his arm lightly to get his attention. Hawk tore his gaze from the window.
"Nay, have you?"
"Nay, and that worries me. He's your best friend, Hawk. I thought he'd be here. What might have kept him?"
Hawk shrugged and glanced quickly at the castle. Ah, finally. The candles were out, and his wife was on her way. Lydia's room was full dark. Suddenly, Grimm seemed inconsequential. Even his irritation at Grimm's lies slid off his shoulders with the thought of his beloved Adrienne.
"Tonight, I will bind her to me for all eternity," he pledged silently.
"Hawk!"
Lydia waved her hand in front of his face, and he dragged his gaze from the castle with an effort.
"Hmm.
Oh, my,"
Lydia sighed.
"How you do remind me of your father when you look like that."
"Like what?"
Hawk drawled, watching the front steps for the first glimpse of his wife.
"Like some savage Viking set to conquer and take captive."
"I'm the captive in this, mother,"
Hawk snorted. "The lass has fair spelled me, I think." Lydia's laughter tinkled merrily.
"Good. 'Tis as it should be, then."
She gave him a brisk kiss.
"She'll be here any moment."
Lydia straightened his linen that didn't need straightening, smoothed his perfect hair that didn't need smoothing, and in general clucked over him like a nervous hen.
"Mother," he growled.
"I just want you to look your best."
Lydia broke off. She spared a nervous laugh for herself.
"Just look at me, a jittery mother, all in a tizzy at her son's wedding."
"She's already seen me at my worst, and loves me in spite of it. And what are you doing fussing over me? I thought we weren't speaking. What plans are you devising now?"
he demanded. He knew her too well to believe she'd just capitulated quietly to his plans to leave this evening.
Hawk, Lydia protested, you wound me.
Hawk snorted. I'll ask you again. What nefarious plot have you devised to try to keep us here? Did you drug the wine? Hire ruthless mercenaries to hold us captive in my own castle? Nay, I have it. You dispatched a messenger to the MacLeod. Telling them now might be a good time to lay siege to Dalkeith, right? He wouldn't be surprised if she'd done any of those things. Lydia was formidable when she set her mind on something. Nothing was beyond her, if it might mean keeping Adrian by her side. Like mother, like son, he acknowledged ruefully. Lydia glanced studiously away.
I simply refuse to think of you leaving until the time comes that you try to. Until then, I intend to enjoy every last moment of my son's wedding. Besides, 'tis apparent Adrienne has no idea what you're planning. I'm not so certain she won't side with me,
she snipped pertly.
Here she comes!
Tavis interrupted their squabbling and waved their attention to the stone stairs that cascaded into the upper bailey.
Oh, isn't she lovely?
Lydia breathed. A collective sigh ruffled the night and blended with the fragrant breeze dappling the ridge.
Could be a princess.
Nay, a queen.
Prettier than a fairy queen.
A wee lass with blonde ringlets clapped her hands delightedly.
The Lady of Dalkeith upon the Sea!
A crofter doffed his cap and clasped it over his heart in a gesture of fealty. Lydia's smile faded as she watched Adrienne head for the stables. No one spoke until she reappeared a few moments later, leading a horse to a nearby wall.
But what? What is that? A horse? Ah, I suppose she's riding a horse up,
Lydia murmured, perplexed.
A horse? Why wouldn't she just walk? 'Tis fair short space to cross, I'll say,
Tavis wondered. Beneath the brilliant moon they could clearly see her stepping up on a low stone wall and mounting a horse, wedding dress and all. Hawk's eyes narrowed thoughtfully. His body tensed, and he stifled an oath when he saw Rushka, who had been standing silently beside them, trace a gesture upon the air.
"What are you doing?"
Hawk growled, closing his hand around the Rome's arm. Rushka stopped, and his brown eyes rested on the hawk with deep affection and deeper sorrow.
"We had hoped he wouldn't come, my friend. We took all the precautions, the ruined crosses, the ruins. I did everything I could to prevent it. Who wouldn't come? What are you talking about? Prevent what?
Hawk gritted. Every inch of his body was suddenly alive. All day something had been gnawing at him, demanding that he take action, and now it exploded to a fever pitch in his blood. He'd like nothing more than to take action. But against what? What was happening? The thunder of approaching horses rumbled the earth behind him.
He comes.
Rushka tried to retrieve his arm from the hawk's deadly grip, but dislodging a boulder from his chest might have been easier. The clip-clop of horses' hooves canted up the ridge, drawing nearer.
"Talk to me," Hawk gritted, glaring down at Rushka. "Now!"
"Hawk?"
Lydia asked, worried.
"Hawk,"
Tavis warned.
"Hawk!"
His wife's husky voice cut through the night behind him. The hawk froze, his gaze locked on the elderly Rome who'd been like a father to him for so many years. A flicker in the man's eyes warned him not to turn, to just pretend nothing was happening.
"Do not look at your wife," Rushka's eyes were saying.
He could see her, mirrored deep in the Rome's brown eyes. Not turn around? Impossible. Hawk tugged his furious gaze from Rushka. He turned on one booted heel, slowly. His wife. And next to her, upon the hawk's own black charger, sat Adam. Hawk stood in silence, his hands fisted at his sides. The ridge was eerily still. Not one child peeped. Not one crofter breathed so much as a whisper or troubled murmur.
"Lore Keeper."
Adam nodded a familiar acknowledgement to Rushka, and Hawk's gaze drifted between the strange smithy and his Rome friend. Rushka was white as new-fallen snow. His brown eyes were huge and deep, his lean body rigid. He did not return the greeting, but cast his eyes to the ground, signing those strange symbols furiously. Adam laughed.
"One would think you might have realized that it hasn't helped so far, old man." give it up. Not even your sacrifice helped, although it did mollify me, slightly.
Lydia gasped.
What sacrifice?
No one answered her.
What sacrifice?
She repeated tersely.
Does he mean Esmeralda?
When no one responded, she shook Rushka by the arm.
Does he?
Her eyes flew back to Adam.
Who are you?
She demanded, her eyes narrowing like a mother bear's as she prepared to defend her cubs. Rushka dragged her against him.
Be still, m'lady, he gritted. Do not interfere in that which you don't understand.
Don't tell me what I...
Lydia began heatedly, then shut her mouth beneath the hawk's lethal gaze. Hawk turned back to Adrian and calmly raised his hands to help her dismount, as though nothing were amiss. Adam laughed again, and it made Hawk's skin crawl.
She goes with me, Lord Buzzard.
She stays with me. She is my wife, and it's Hawk, Lord Hawk, to you.
Nay, a vulture, a sad scavenger to pick over the unwanted remains, Lord Buzzard.
She chooses, was the deal made, do you recall? I saved your wife for a price. The price is now paid.
You've lost.
Nay. The hawk shook his head slowly. She chose already, and 'twas me she chose.
It would appear she unchose you,
Adam mocked.
Get off my horse, smithy. Now!
Hawk! Rushka warned, low and worried.
Hawk!
It was Adrienne's voice that stilled him. Froze him in mid-step toward the smithy. Until now, the hawk had been focusing his attention and anger on the smithy, and he knew why. It was the same reason he had delayed turning around when he heard the horses approaching, the reason why he'd looked at Rushka instead. He was afraid to look at his wife, of what he might see in her lovely eyes. Might she truly have unchosen him? Could he have been so completely wrong? He paused, hand on his sword hilt, and forced his eyes to hers. The insecurity that had seized him the very first day he'd found his wife at the smithy's forge reclaimed him with a vengeance. Her face was smooth and void of emotion.
He speaks the truth. I have chosen him.
Hawk gaped at her, stunned, not so much as a flicker of emotion in her silver eyes.
How is he making you lie, lass?
Hawk refused to believe her words, clinging to his faith in her.
What is he threatening you with, my heart?
Nothing,
Adrienne said coldly.
And stop calling me that. I have never been your heart. I told you that from the beginning. I don't want you. It was Adam all along.
Hawk searched her face. Cool, composed, she sat the mare like a queen, regal and untouchable.
And just what the hell was Uster then?
He growled. She shrugged, her hands palms up.
A vacation?
She replied flippantly.
Hawk tensed, his jaw gritting. Then just what were the stables this afternoon?
A mistake,
Adam cut him off flatly.
One she won't be repeating.
Hawk's gaze never wavered from Adrian's.
Was it a mistake?
He asked softly. Adrian inclined her head, a pause the length of a heartbeat.
Yes.
The hawk saw not so much as a flicker in her face.
What game play you, lass?
He breathed, danger emanating from every inch of his rigid stance, charging the air around them. The night hung still and heavy. On the ridge not one person moved, riveted to the terrible scene unfolding.
No game, hawk. It's over between us. Sorry.
Another nonchalant shrug.
Adrienne, stop jesting, he growled.
'Tis no jest,
she interrupted him with sudden anger.
The only joke here is on you. You didn't really think I could stay here, did you? I mean, come on.
She waved a hand dismissively at the splendor of the wedding feast.
I'm from the 20th century, you fool. I'm used to luxuries. It's the little things that spoil. Coffee, steaming showers, limousines, and all the glitter and hubbub. This was a lovely diversion, quite a little getaway with some of the most fascinating men.
She smiled at Adam, and it took every ounce of the hawk's will not to leap at the smithy and choke the life from his arrogant body. Instead, he stood like a marble effigy, hands curled at his side.
You were a virgin.
So? You taught me pleasure, but the smithy gave me more. It's that simple.
Adrian fiddled with the reins of her mount.
Nay! Hawk roared. 'Tis some game! What have you threatened my wife with, smithy?
But it was Adrian who answered, in that same calm, utterly detached voice. That husky voice that made him think he'd gone mad, for the words tumbling forth must surely be lies. Yet she didn't look as if she was being forced. There was no sword to her throat, no shimmer of tears in her eyes, and her voice, it was level and calm.
He has threatened me only with greater pleasure than you ever gave me. He has true magic at his command. Don't waste your time hunting for us. You won't find us. He has promised to take me places I've never dreamed existed.
Adrian nudged her mount closer to the smithies. Adam flashed a blinding smile at the hawk.
Looks like you lost after all, pretty bird.
Nay!
Hawk roared, lunging for the smithy and drawing his sword in one fluid sweep. The charger bucked at the hawk's bellow and sidestepped wildly. Rushka grabbed the hawk's arm and cleaved his blow down so hard that the sword lodged in the earth at his feet. Adam raised his hand.
Nay!
Adrian quickly restrained the smithy's hand.
You will not hurt him. No bloodshed. It's messy,
she appended.
I don't like blood. It makes me ill.
Adam cocked his head and lowered his hand.
Your wish is my command, beauty.
Is this truly what you wish, lass?
Hawk's eyes were black and soulless.
Yes,
she said softly, carefully.
He is not forcing you? Tell me. Just say the word, wife, and I will kill him with my bare hands, he thought.
She shook her head and met his gaze levelly.
Say it, Hawk gritted. He's not forcing you?
He uses no coercion against me.
Do you love him?
He hated himself when his voice broke roughly over the words. His throat was so tight he could scarcely breathe.
I love him the way I loved Eberhard, she sighed.
She smiled vapidly at Adam, who suddenly narrowed his eyes at her last words.
Enough, beauty.
Adam captured her hand in his.
The universe awaits us, and your pleasure is my command.
Hawk's heart wrenched and twisted. The damned Eberhard, her first love, whether he'd ever made love to her or not. He turned away before he could make a bloody massacre of the ridge single-handedly. When he finally returned his gaze to her, it was too late. She was gone. The mass of hundreds on the ridge at Dalkeith upon the sea stood numbly as both horses and riders simply vanished into the night air. One moment they were there, the next, nothing. But a soft voice floated on the breeze.
You were right about your falcons, Shahok,
came the strange last words of the woman he'd loved, and who had effectively destroyed the once proud laird of Dalkeith upon the sea. Lydia clutched at his sleeve limply. Rushka cursed harshly in a language no one had ever heard before. Hawk only stared blindly into the night. Chapter 30
Where are we?
Adrian asked Adam woodenly. He was leading her mount by the reins down a dark path through a strange forest. Twisted branches wove a gnarled canopy over her head. Occasionally a ray of faint light would pierce the dense gloom, and the creaking branches would glimmer like bleached bones. No crickets, no normal noises, only the screech of flying creatures. The bracken rustled, revealing brief glimpses of dwarfed gnomes with wild faces. She shivered violently and hugged her arms around herself.
You are in my realm.
Who are you really, Adam Black?
Her voice broke on the simple sentence, raw and full of anguish. For an answer, she received a mocking smile, nothing more.
Tell me,
she demanded dully, but the dark man at her side rode in silence.
At least tell me why. Why what?
He cocked a curious brow at her.
Why did you do this to me? What did I do? Why did you send me back in time and take me away again? And break my heart and leave me dying inside, she thought.
Adam stopped their mounts, amusement lighting his dark visage. He reached out a hand to stroke her pale cheek, and she shuddered beneath his hand.
Oh, beauty, is that what you think? How very self-engrossed and utterly charming you are!
His laughter rolled, but it was his next words that shafted through her soul like a knife.
It had nothing to do with you, winsome beauty. Any beautiful woman would have sufficed, but I thought you hated beautiful men.
I heard you, there in your library, swearing off men, all men. Yet it would seem I was mistaken, or you lied, which is more likely.
What are you saying?
She breathed faintly. Any woman would have sufficed. Her heart was laid bare and cleaved through by this man's twisted game, and he dared say so baldly that it hadn't mattered one whit who she was? A pawn? Again? Her jaw locked temporarily. I will not scream. I will not. When she was certain she could speak again without raging, she said coolly,
You got what you wanted. Why don't you just tell me who you are?
She had to find out more about this man to avenge herself, to avenge her husband.
True.
I did get what I wanted. The hawk looked utterly destroyed, wouldn't you say? Crushed. Adam flicked his hand lightly over hers.
You did very well tonight, beauty, but tell me.
His eyes searched hers intently, and she stiffened when it seemed they might penetrate into her very soul.
What did you mean about his falcons?
Adrienne's breath hitched.
He told me once that all his falcons had flown him,
she lied evenly.
You told me I had to be utterly convincing, or you would kill him, so I chose that reminder to drive the point home. That's all.
That had better be all. His face was cold and unforgiving, just as it had been in the Brach before the hawk had come looking for her, before what should have been the wedding of her dreams. Icily, he'd explained to her in exact and excruciating detail precisely how he would destroy the hawk and everyone at Dalkeith if she failed his will. Then he'd shown her things he could do, things her mind still couldn't quite comprehend. But she'd understood that he was perfectly capable of carrying out the mass destruction he'd threatened. Two choices he'd given her. Either lie to the hawk and break his heart, not to mention her own, or stand by while Adam used his unnatural powers to kill him. Then Lydia, followed by every man, woman, and child at Dalkeith. No, there had been no choice at all. The hellish decision had given her an intimate understanding of what a man called the King's Whore might once have suffered. When she'd left the Brach, shaking and pale, she'd seized one last moment of glory. She'd made love to the hawk with all the passion in her soul, saying goodbye and dying inside. She'd known it would be horrible to lie to him, but she hadn't anticipated just how deeply it would cut her. Adam had been unyielding on that point. He'd made it clear that she must fully convince the hawk she desired Adam. After the incredible intimacy she and Hawk had shared, she'd known she would have to say hateful, horrid things to convince him. She shivered violently as Adam's thumb brushed her lower lip. She slapped his hand away in spite of her fear.
Don't touch me!
If I thought for a moment you had tried to tell him something more, I would go back and kill him even as we speak, beauty.
I gave you what you wanted, you bastard!
Adrienne cried.
All of Dalkeith is safe from you now.
It doesn't matter. Adam shrugged indolently. He's dead, anyway. Adam tugged at her reins and resumed their slow passage beneath the rustling limbs.
What?
Adrienne hissed. Adam smiled puckishly.
I thought you might enjoy the scenic route back.
This trail is a timeline, and we just passed the year 1857. It's that misty bend back there between the trees, for lack of a better word. He's been dead for over 300 years. A silent scream began to build inside her.
Who are you?
They used to call us gods, he said dispassionately. You would do well to worship me.
I'll see you in hell first,
she breathed. Not possible, Beauty. We don't die.
Chapter 31. Seattle, November 1997. Adrian drew her arm back and winged the book like a frisbee. It was supposed to fly across the room and crash with a resounding thump against the wall. Instead, it dropped limply, landing on the floor at the foot of her bed. She glanced at the volume in disgust and noticed that it had fallen open to a page. She squinted to read it from her perch at the footrail. Dreams about stopped-up commodes can symbolize many things. The dreamer is emotionally repressed. Emotional and/or physical purging is recommended. A recurring dream of this nature signifies the dreamer has endured a traumatic experience from which he/she must find some kind of release, or serious psychological damage may occur. So much for a sign from heaven. Adrian swallowed a choked laugh that turned into a sob.
Who writes this stuff?
She dangled her bare foot over the bed and poked the book shut with her toe. 1001 Little Dreams. How bizarre. She hadn't even realized she had that book in her library. Even more bizarre that she'd been dreaming about toilets for 10 nights in a row. Nothing else, just backed-up, overflowing commodes. Lovely. But she didn't have to be hit over the head with a dream guide. She knew what was wrong with her. 15 days ago, she had materialized in her sprawling Victorian house at 93 Coattail Lane, Seattle, U.S. of A. And she hadn't spoken to a single soul since then. Every scrap of energy she had went toward maintaining her composure. Her tight skin, tight, dry eyes, tight little death going on inside. She understood perfectly well that if she let even one tiny tear sneak out of the dry corner of her eye, she couldn't be held responsible for the flooding that could cause mass evacuations throughout the state. She scratched her tight scalp with a tight little hand as she tightly petted Mooney's silky back. She touched Mooney's pink nose in a tight, economical motion. No stopped-up commodes in a cat's world, Adrian mused as Mooney curled her paws into her hair and began a thrumming little purr. It was Mooney's hungry muse that roused her from the bed. Adrian eased her aching body from the down coverlets and padded slowly to the kitchen. God, but she felt 500 years old herself, in pain from head to toe, from a heartache she knew would never heal. Adrian woodenly opened a can of tuna, white albacore, only the best for Mooney. She slumped down on the floor and brushed irritably at the hand that shoved a book in front of her.
Go away, Marie. I need to be alone.
Adrian marveled at the pale swirls of lime in the jade tile of the kitchen floor, and wondered why she'd never noticed them before. She rubbed lightly at one of the swirls. Slate tile could be so interesting. Riveting, in fact.
Is book you dropped?
Marie said in her thick accent. Adrian didn't move. The book brushed her cheek. Heavens, but the woman was insistent. The book's sharp corner poked the soft underside of her neck. Probably another stupid dream book. Well, she just wouldn't look at it.
Quit shoving at me!
Adrian took the book blindly, her eyes squeezed shut.
Go away now,
she mumbled. There. That wasn't too bad. She applauded herself for performing a simple function with precision. No tears. Not one thought of the thing she wasn't thinking of. Adrian took a deep breath and forced a grim, tight smile. She was going to be fine. Small things now. Big things soon.
I think I make for you some tea,
Marie said. Adrian's stomach heaved and rolled.
No. I think, then, I make dinner for Señorita.
I'm not hungry. Go away.
Okay. I move things to garage,
Marie grunted. Move things? Leave the house?
No!
Adrian controlled her voice with a tremendous effort.
I mean, that's not necessary, Marie. God knows this old house is big enough for both of us. It's no good. I'm no good to you. I move now back to garage.
Marie watched her carefully. Adrian sighed. Marie simply had to stay in the house. She couldn't stand the huge, aching silence, the empty rooms. The hum of the refrigerator might drive her mad.
Marie, I don't want you to move back out. I really want you to stay with...
Adrian opened her eyes, her voice trailing off as she stared in horror at the book in her hands. A study of medieval falconry.
Stay tight.
Would you soar for me, Falcon? I'll take you higher than you've ever been. I'll teach you to bank heights you only dreamed existed. He'd certainly made good on that promise.
And now she was falling from those incredible heights without a parachute, or a Mary Poppins umbrella, or anything else to break her fall. Adrian de Simone Douglas squeezed her arms around her stomach and started screaming. The tiny Cuban woman dropped to her knees and very carefully pulled Adrian into her arms. Then she rocked her, smoothed her hair, and did her best to comfort her. For days and days, Adrian lay on her back replaying every precious memory on the blank screen of her ceiling. She'd pulled the drape shut and turned all the lights out. She couldn't stand the world to be so bright without him. Marie floated in and out, bringing food and drink that remained untouched, and Mooney stayed at her side unceasingly. Adrian just drifted in and out of consciousness, as the mind does when grief runs too deep to handle. Eventually she came back to herself, but she went the long way around. On the glistening silica sands of Morar, Adam Black sauntered with arrogant grace to his queen's side.
"Where have you been wandering, minstrel mine?"
Queen Avile asked silkily.
"What new tales and entertainments have you collected for me?"
"Oh, the finest of tales! An epic grand adventure," Adam bragged, drawing the elegant courtiers near. The Fae loved a good tale. The thicker the subterfuge, the more intense the passions, the more aroused the court. They'd long since tired of happy endings. Immune to suffering themselves, they were enamored with mortal struggles and casualties. The queen herself was most especially partial to a tragicomedy of errors, and this new tale did suit that genre well.
"Tell us, jester! Sing and play for us!"
the court of the Tuatha De Danann cried. Adam's smile gleamed brightly. He met his queen's eye and held it long.
"Once upon a time, there was a mortal man, a man so fair even the Fae Queen herself had noticed him."
The queen's eyes glittered brightly as she listened, at first in amusement, after a time with obvious agitation, and finally with a sensation that vaguely resembled remorse. Chapter 32 Lydia sighed as she picked through her seeds. The new year had inched past them as if it traveled on the humped back of a snail. She didn't even want to recall the grim scene Christmas had been. Winter had descended upon Dalkeith in force. Icicles twisted obscenely from the shutters, and the dratted door to the front steps had been frozen shut this morning, effectively sealing her in her own home. Lydia could remember a time when she'd loved the winter, when she'd reveled in each season and the unique pleasures it brought. Christmas had once been her favorite holiday, but now she missed Adrian and Elise.
"Come home, children. I need you," she prayed silently.
The sound of splintering wood suddenly rent the air, causing her to jerk her head up in an involuntary gesture that sent her precious seeds flying. Damned inconsiderate of them to split firewood right outside the window. Lydia pushed irritably at her hair and began to reorganize the scattered seeds. She dreamed of the flowers she would plant, if spring ever came again. Another resounding crash shuddered through the great hall. She stifled a very unladylike oath and laid her seeds aside.
"Keep it down out there! A body's trying to do a bit of thinking!" she yelled.
Still the deafening crashes continued.
"We aren't all that short of firewood, lads!"
Lydia roared at the frozen door. Her words were met with a terrible screeching noise.
"That's it! That's it!"
She leapt up from her chair and seethed. The last one had seemed to come from... upstairs? She cocked her head at an angle. Someone had either decided it was too cold to split firewood outside, or was busily turning the furniture into kindling instead. The crash was followed by the shattering of glass.
"Holy shit!"
Lydia muttered, as her lovely daughter-in-law would have offered quite perkily. She spun on her heel, grabbed up her skirts, and raced the stairs like a lass of 20. Hand on her heart, she flew down the corridor, skidding past gawking maids and tense soldiers. How many people had stood about listening to this insane destruction, while she'd been sitting downstairs.
"Not the nursery," she prayed. "Anything but that."
Her son would never destroy that room of dreams. Granted, he'd been a bit out of sorts, but still. No, he definitely would not do something so terrible. Not her son.
"By all that's holy, oh yes, he would."
And he was. Her breath came in burning gasps as she stared, dumbfounded. Her son stood in the nursery surrounded by a twisted heap of horrid broken wooden limbs. He'd been literally ripping apart the lovely crafted furnishings. He was clad in only a kilt, his upper body glistening with sweat. The veins in his arms were swollen, and his hands were raw and bloody. His raven hair was loose, but for the two war braids at either temple.
"By the sweet saints! Just paint his face blue, and I wouldn't even know him from my son," Lydia thought.
The hawk stood silently, wild-eyed. There was a smudge of blood on his face where he'd wiped it sweat. Lydia watched, frozen in horror, as he tilted an oil bowl, drizzling its contents over the splinters of furniture, the toys and books, the magnificent dollhouse that had been squashed flat in his gargantuan rage. When he dropped the candle, a soft scream wrenched her mouth wide. The flames leapt up, greedily devouring the pile of hawks and Lydia's shattered dreams. Shaking with hurt and fury, Lydia pressed a hand to her mouth and swallowed a sob. She turned away before the animal that used to be her son could see her tears.
"We have to do something,"
Lydia murmured woodenly, staring blankly at the kitchen hearth. Tavis stepped close behind her, his hand suspended in the air just above her waist. He dropped his head forward and inhaled deeply of her scent.
"I'll speak with him, Lydia."
"He won't listen," she choked as she spun around. "I've tried. Dear God, we've all tried. He's like some rabid dog, snarling and foaming, and, oh, Tavis, my nursery, my grandbabies."
"I haven't tried yet,"
Tavis said calmly, dropping his hands to grip her waist. Lydia cocked her head, marveling at the implicit authority in his words. He'd managed to surprise her once again, this gentle man who'd stood patiently by her side for so long.
"You will speak with him?"
she echoed hopefully, her eyes glimmering with unshed tears.
"Aye,"
he assured her. Strength and ability laced his reply. How could it have taken her so long to begin to see this man clearly? Some of her astonishment must have been evident in her gaze, because he gave her that patient smile, and said tenderly,
"I knew one day you'd finally open your eyes, Lydia. I also knew it would be worth every minute of the wait,"
he added quietly. Lydia swallowed hard as a fission of heat and hope and heady, tumultuous love spread through her in a wave. Love! How long had she been in love with this man? She wondered dumbly. Tavis brushed her lips with his, a light friction that promised so much more.
"Don't worry. I care for him like my own, Lydia. And, as if he were my own, 'tis time we had a good, thorough father-son kind of talk."
"But what if he refuses to listen?"
she fretted. Tavis smiled.
"He'll listen. You can take Tavis McTarvet's word on that, I'll see."
The hawk brooded into the fire, watching ghosts dance whitely in the spaces between the flames. They were memory-born and hell-bound, as he surely was. But purgatory, if not heaven, was within his reach, tidily captured in a bottle, and so he toasted the ghosts as he raced them to oblivion. He picked up another bottle of whiskey and turned it in his hand, studying its rich amber color with drunken appreciation. He raised the bottle to his lips, his hand fisted about the neck, and bit out the stopper. Briefly, he remembered biting out the stopper of a gypsy potion, remembered covering his wife's body with his own and tasting, touching, kissing. He'd been fool enough then to believe in love.
Bah! Adam! It had always been him. From the first day he'd seen her,
she'd been standing pressed against a tree trunk, watching the blasted smithy with hunger in her eyes. He tossed back a swallow of whiskey and considered going back to court, back to King James. A crooked, bitter smile curved his lip, even as he pictured himself prowling the boudoirs of Edinburgh again. Another part of his mind recalled the roiling, thick steam rising from a scented bath, the sheen of oil upon her skin as she'd tossed her head back, baring the lovely column of her throat to his teeth.
bearing everything to him, or so he'd thought. Adrienne, treacherous, traitorous, lying, unfaithful bitch. "Lay me into the dead earth now, and be done with it," he muttered to the fire. He didn't even react when the door to the study was flung open so hard that it hit the wall. "Close the door, man. A bit of a draft chilling my bones, there is." The hawk slurred unsteadily, without even bothering to see who had invaded the drunken squalor of his private hell. He again tilted the bottle to his mouth and took a long swallow. Tavis crossed the room in three purposeful strides and smashed the bottle out of Hawk's hand with such force that it shattered in a splash of glass and whiskey on the smooth stones of the hearth. He gazed at Tavis a befuddled moment, then reached, undeterred, for a second bottle. Tavis stepped between the Hawk and the crated liquor.
"Get out of my way, old man," Hawk growled, tensing to rise.
He had barely gained his feet when Tavis's fist connected solidly with his jaw, spilling him back into the chair. Hawk wiped the back of his hand across his mouth and glared up at Tavis.
"Why'd you go and do that for, Tavis McTarver?" he grumbled, making no move to defend himself. "I don't give a bloody hell what you do to yourself, Laird," Tavis sneered. "Just get the hell out of this castle, and don't do it in front of your mother." "Who the hell do you think you are?" "I know who I am. I'm the man who watched you grow from wee lad to braw Laird. I'm the man who burst with pride while he watched you make some hard choices."
Tavis's voice dropped a harsh notch.
I'm just the man who has loved you since the day you drew your first hungry breath in this world. And now I'm the man who's going to thrash you within an inch of your worthless life if you don't get a grip on yourself."
Hawk gaped, then swiped irritably at Tavis.
"Go away."
He closed his eyes wearily.
"Oh, I'm not done yet, my boy,"
Tavis said through gritted teeth.
"You are not fit to be laird of a dunghill. 'Tis obvious you have no intention of pulling yourself together, so until you do, you can just get the bleeding hell out of Lydia's castle. Now, I'll send word to Adrian and bring him home. He'll make a fine laird."
The hawk's eyes flew open.
"Over my dead body," he snarled. "Fine, so be it,"
Tavis spit back.
"You're no use to anyone as you are now, anyway. You might as well fall on your own claymore for all the good you're doing your people." "I am laird here,"
Hawk slurred, his eyes flashing furiously.
"And you, old man, nah, hell, you're fired."
Although he had intended, when he still had his wife, to relinquish his place to Adrian, it was currently damned cold outside, and he wasn't going anywhere just yet. Maybe in the spring, if he hadn't drowned himself in whiskey yet. Tavis yanked Hawk to his feet in a swift motion, surprising the drunken laird.
"Pretty strong for an old man," Hawk muttered.
Tavis pulled the stumbling Hawk to the doors of the study.
"Get off me," the Hawk bellowed. "I expected more from you, lad. A fool I must be, but I thought you were the kind of man who fought for what he wanted. But no, you just fell apart in the face of a wee bit of adversity. Ugh. And my wife leaving me for another man is only a wee bit of adversity. That's what you call it?"
Hawk slurred thickly, his bird deepening with his anger.
"Regardless of how you perceive what happened, you still have a family here, and a clan who needs its laird. If you can't do the job, then step aside for someone who can." "Who the hell put you in charge of me?"
Hawk roared. Tavis's own burr thickened as his temper mounted.
"Your mother, you blethering idiot! And even if she hadn't asked me, I would have come after you myself. You may be killing yourself, lad, but I'll no be having you torturing Lydia while you're doing it. All I'm doing, old man, is having a wee bit of a drink,"
Hawk protested.
"You've been having a wee bit of a drink for over a month now. I, for one, am tired of watching you guzzle yourself to death. If you cannot put down a bottle, then just get the hell out. Go piss the night away in a snowdrift, where the people who love you are no force to watch."
Tavis kicked open the doors and tossed the stumbling Hawk face first into the snow.
And donna be coming back in until you can be nice to your mother.
And when you're ready to be laird again,
and you've given up the bottle, you can return, but not until then.
Tavis roared as the hawk struggled to pull his head out of a drift. When Hawk finally managed to struggle upright, he snorted disbelievingly when he saw the man he'd thought of as a mild-mannered tanner send the hawk's own guards to stand wide-legged in front of the door, crossed arms clearly barring him entrance into his own castle.
"Just stay out!"
Tavis bellowed with such volume that Hawk heard him through the castle's heavy wooden doors. Adrian hadn't realized how thoroughly she hated winter. The pale face of the clock above the mantel chimed once, twice, then lapsed into silence. 2 o'clock in the morning, a time when being awake could make a person feel like the only living creature left in the world. And Adrian did feel that way, until Marie silently entered the library. Adrian glanced up and opened her mouth to say goodnight, but instead, a deluge of words flooded out despite the dam she'd so painstakingly erected. Marie tucked herself into an armchair and smoothed an afghan across her lap. Adrian poked at the fire and opened a bottle of sweet port while she told Marie a story she'd never told anyone. The story of the orphan girl who thought she'd fallen in love with a prince, only to discover that Eberhard Darrow Garrett had been a prince of organized crime and that he'd been sending her on vacations to get drugs across the border in her luggage, her car, sewn into her clothing, and how, since she had always been packed and unpacked by his attendants, she hadn't known. She'd simply enjoyed wearing his incredible 10-carat diamond engagement ring, riding in his limos, and thumbing her nose at the Franciscan nuns in the old orphanage on First Street. How she hadn't known that the FBI had been drawing its net around him ever tighter. She'd seen that a wealthy, undeniably attractive man was showering her with love, or so she thought at the time. She'd had no idea she was a last-ditch effort to get a series of shipments out of the country. She'd never suspected that she was less than nothing to him, a beautiful, innocent young woman no one would ever suspect, his perfect pigeon. Until the day she'd overheard a terrible conversation she'd never been meant to hear. She told Marie in a hushed voice how she'd turned state's evidence and bought her own freedom. And then how Eberhard, whom the FBI had managed to miss after all, had come after her in earnest. Marie sipped her port and listened. She told Marie how, when she'd finally been trapped by him in an old abandoned warehouse, sick of running and hiding and being afraid, she'd done the only thing she could do when he'd raised his gun. She'd killed him before he could kill her. At that point, Marie waved an impatient hand.
"Is not real story. Will you tell me this?"
she asked accusingly. Adrian blinked. She'd just told the woman what she'd been afraid to tell anyone, that she'd killed a man. She'd done it in self-defense, granted, but she'd killed a man. She told Marie things she'd never trusted to anyone before, and the woman waved it away, pretty much accused her of wasting her time.
"What do you mean, Marie? It was real,"
she said defensively.
"It happened. I was there."
Marie rummaged through her small reticule of English to find the right words.
"Yes, yes, senorita. Maybe it's real, but it's not important. It's over and forgotten, and it's not why you weep like world is ending. Tell me your story. Who cares where you come from? Or I? Today matters. Yesterday is skin on snake, to be shed many times."
Adrian sat very still for a long moment as a chill worked its way down her spine and into her belly. The hall clock chimed the quarter hour, and Adrian gazed at Marie with new appreciation. Drawing a deep breath, Adrian told her of Dalkeith upon the sea, of Lydia, and of Shahak. Marie's brow